From WBUR Boston and NPR, I'm Jackie Leiden, in for Tom Ashbrook, and this is On Point. It's kind of startling when researchers discover that what your grandparents told you long ago is pretty much true. Researchers have now put the stamp of science on that fuzzy old word, gratitude. Turns out gratitude is really important for one's happiness, for his or her health, even for a community's cohesion, for society. This hour on Point, the big difference a little gratitude makes. You can join us on air or online. How are you thinking about gratitude this holiday season? Are you paying it forward in some way? Join us anytime at onpointradio.org or on Twitter and Facebook at OnPoint Radio. Joining me first from Berkeley, California, is Dr. Docker Keltner. He's co-director of the Greater Good Science Center in the Department of Psychology at UC Berkeley, and he's the author of Born to be Good, The Science of a Meaningful Life. His article on the science of happier holidays recently appeared in the Wall Street Journal, and you can find a link to it on our website at onpointradio.org. So, Docker, welcome to On Point.
It's great to be with you, Jackie.
Well, it was fascinating to read this article, which I believe you wrote sort of around the Thanksgiving season, but that counts for the holidays as well. And one of the first points you bring up here, it seems obvious, but you, of course, dig into this scientifically, is that, obvious to me anyway, materialistic people are less happy than their peers and experience fewer positive emotions.
Yeah, so, you know, what the science has documented is that, not surprisingly, as you say, you know, in the past 25 years, we've seen in young people and people of different ages a rise in materialism, the idea that buying consumer products is a pathway to happiness, right? And, you know, a lot of people and your listeners feel that acutely right now, that we're out fulfilling our shopping lists and so forth. And what the science shows is that time and time again with different methods, that if I think that buying things is going to make me happy, I'm going down the wrong path. That data show that materialism, the feeling, the conviction that consumer products will bring you happiness, actually makes people less happy. It makes them feel more stressed out. It makes them feel more anxious and occasionally depressed. So I think that science, although we know it intuitively, is reason for pause to wonder about what really matters.
Well, we are bombarded, as you say, and I would like to dig a little more deeply into how you know this, about anxiety or depression, or as you said, we know it intuitively and you're documenting it. But also, we are now, I think, bombarded with ads. American culture is predicated on that. I mean, so not really new. Maybe the frequency is newer. But how do we avoid what you have called the unhappiness trap?
Well, I think there are several different ways in which we can avoid the unhappiness trap of thinking that materialism will bring you happiness, going out and, you know, emptying your bank account to buy things and then and feeling empty afterwards. One is the focus on gratitude, right? And it really is a different mindset, which is just to take a step back and to feel reverential or feel sort of a sense of things that are precious about what is given to you by other people, right? And I think that that focus on the gifts of other people really changes your mindset towards materialism, that other people bring you social delights. They bring you – they help you in life. They assist you. They bring you laughter. They bring you poetry and whatever it may be. So one – antidote to materialism is gratitude.
Mm-hmm. I didn't want to focus too much on just talking about materialism right at the top because
right.
It isn't necessarily, you know, we're all looking in the mirror thinking, am I materialistic? What does it mean to be materialistic? Maybe I should have the expert, Dr. Docker Keltner, define, especially for the purposes of your studies, what you're saying materialistic is. Because, you know, this culture promotes a faster, stronger, speedier, shinier. I mean, that's no exaggeration.
Yeah. So I think, you know, the simple way that scientists capture this spirit of materialism is with items like, I think that, you know, when I purchase new products, it's going to actually boost my happiness. Or if I move up a station in life and have a better car and a bigger house, it'll change the meaning of my life. And so if you endorse those kinds of convictions on the measures of materialism, you would score high. And then what scientists go on to document is that people who live by that belief or credos actually are feeling a little more anxious. They feel a little bit more like, ironically, and even on occasion score higher on measures of depression. So there is a trap and an irony to this.
Is it anything like food, and that you taste something and you think you're going to be very, very happy and, gee, you want a lot of it now, but then somehow the pleasure isn't sustained when there is, in fact, a bounty of it?
Yeah, that's one of the, you know, the very enduring lessons we learn from the science of happiness, which is that we adapt to material objects or consumer products, right? So, you know, you go out and, you know, you buy the perfect new backpack or the new smartphone, and it's shiny and bright and pleasing for that first hour, and then the delights of it, they dissipate really quickly. They vanish, right? And what, you know, another antidote to the traps of materialism is coming out of new research by Cornell psychologist Tom Gilovich, who's showing maybe what we should do is, instead of orienting our sort of our capital and our purchases to consumer products, we should orient towards experience, right?
Mm-hmm.
And he finds if we prioritize experiences, like let's take that couple hundred bucks and go somewhere and go on a long hike, that joy and that experience will last a lot longer than the expenditure on a consumer product. So they do the delights of products tend to vanish.
I have to say that I was happy to read that particular point because as a good old public radio veteran, I have always thought that I would rather have the experience, the hike or the travel, especially for me, travel, than, I don't know, you know, the clothes I might see in a really glossy magazine. I'd love to have those, but if I have to choose, I'll have the experience.
Yeah, you know, and this research is very new, and it's so rich. So, you know, what Gilovich is finding is that when you devote money to experiences, right, a weekend trip, you go to the theater, maybe you go to an art museum, or you buy something like a backpack that enables actual experiences. Those experiences, the happiness that they bring, lasts longer. They are richer in your memories when you think back about what brought you happiness in life. They bring you closer to other people. They don't sort of dissipate like our sort of consumer purchases are, bring about. So they have all these benefits that I think we need to really be mindful of as we're in these very materialistic holidays.
We've asked all of you who are listening to call in with your antidotes, your suggestions and observations. And we want to take a call from Norman, who's calling from Savannah, Georgia. Welcome to On Point, Norman.
Hi. Here in Savannah, there are 22 squares laid out by General Oglethorpe in the late 1600s. And each Wednesday at 12 noon, anywhere from 6 to a dozen people, we meet every Wednesday. We all hold hands, and each of us tells what we are grateful for, you know, whether it's health or just living here in Savannah. Someone had a child recently. So we do this every Wednesday at 12 noon, and after the 22 squares, we start all over again. And we find it very meaningful, and when I felt down, my wife says, we'll go anyway, and it really lifts me up.
Hmm. Not tied to any religion, I gather?
No, not at all.
Hmm. All right. Thank you for that, Norman. Dr. Keltner, what do you think?
Well, I think Norman's example, you know, brings into focus again the wisdom of the ages, which is that when you really practice gratitude by sort of reflecting upon it for a moment, maybe ritualizing it socially at the dinner table or, you know, with a friend, and then you express it with really strong intentions, the science shows that that kind of activity, and Norman's examples as evocative and beautiful as one could imagine, that kind of gratitude practice brings about enduring benefits to your happiness, your physical health, your sleep, academic performance for kids. Just thinking for a moment about a very personal, ritualized way in which you can express it, in particular to other people, is very good news.
Well, I thought that was one of the most interesting things in your piece, was that it actually had health benefits, that it actually you measured this, and you really – it's not just about paying it forward, which is good enough, but that it is actually recalibrating your whole system.
It is. So, you know, what we're learning in the neuroscience of positive emotions and we do this research in my lab and other labs, is there's a big part of your nervous system that's about stress. And if you're chronically stressed, it's tough news for your physical health. But there's also a counteracting part of your nervous system. We call it the prosocial nervous system, that involves things like the vagus nerve, that is a bundle of nerves that regulates your heart rate and regulates digestion, oxytocin. And gratitude and compassion and beauty and awe, some of the classic pro-social emotions, activate the pro-social nervous system, which quiets stress and leads to a lot of these kinds of health benefits, from better sleep to a stronger immune system.
This is On Point. I'm Jackie Leiden, in for Tom Ashbrook. We're talking about gratitude. And this is meaty stuff, folks. Researchers say gratitude isn't just humble brag on Facebook or hashtag I'm so blessed. It's a real force for happiness, for health, the person who feels it, the person it's directed at. You can join the conversation. What have you noticed in your own families? Is Uncle Morty a happier guy than Uncle Charlie because he knows, he gets it, he's got a secret sauce? In our materialistic culture, some people seem impervious to gratitude, and we're talking about the science of happier holidays. My guest is Dr. Dacher Keltner, co-director of the Greater Good Science Center in the Department of Psychology at UC Berkeley. His article on the science of happier holidays recently appeared in the Wall Street Journal, and you can find it at onpointradio.org. And I'd like to bring another voice into the conversation. Dr. Sarah Aljo joins us from Chapel Hill, North Carolina. She's a professor and researcher at the Department of Psychology at the University of North Carolina at Chapel Hill. Her research focuses on the effect of gratitude and on relationships. Sarah, we're so grateful that you could join us today.
It's great to be here.
So we certainly want to talk about the normative stuff, but, you are the scientist, and I'd really like to know more about how this works scientifically. You did one study that involved long-term romantic partners. Maybe you could tell us about that.
Yeah, well, so my perspective on gratitude is really about how gratitude helps us to pay more attention to the things, the kind things that other people do for us every day of most days of our lives, and how our feelings of gratitude for those things actually can help bind us more closely together. So we know that, people do things for us all the time, and I know everybody listening probably has heard that they're supposed to feel grateful when somebody does something for them. But we also probably all recognize that we don't always feel grateful. And so my research really takes the perspective that those moments of gratitude are really meaningful. So moments of feeling gratitude as opposed to, say, a little resentful that the person might want something from you, and maybe that's why they did this kind thing for you, or maybe feeling a little misunderstood or indebted. So there's these feelings of gratitude when other people do nice things for us may really stand out. So in one of my studies, we looked at couples in romantic relationships to see how far gratitude could really go to help potentially promote their relationships. And so these couples were very satisfied, and every single day for 14 days in one study, we asked each member of the couple to just report on their feelings of gratitude toward their partner from after their interactions with the partner that day. So as you might imagine, these feelings of gratitude to the partner fluctuated from one day to the next, and I'm assuming that anybody who's has any friend or romantic partner can identify with that. Mm-hmm. There's a little ebb and flow. Interestingly, we also asked them to report about their feelings of satisfaction and connection with their partner on that day. And each person reported independently, and these questions were embedded in a larger questionnaire, so they didn't know that we were studying gratitude specifically. And what we found was that on days when one person said that they felt more, just a little bit more feelings of gratitude toward their partner had independently reported feeling even better, more satisfied and more connected with the grateful person than they had the day before. So from those data, we concluded that gratitude, these little doses of gratitude, may actually act as booster shots for our some of our most important relationships in our everyday life.
Well, and it's interesting, you studied romantic partners, but I imagine this could be any close friendship or, you know, family members or mother-daughter, really, whoever you're interacting with the most frequently.
Yep. We really assume that this kind of effect is probably prevalent throughout most of our relationships. It was kind of easy to study people in romantic relationships for this purpose because they interact every single day, so we could study them that way. But we really are starting to find in a lot of research that's coming out of my lab, and as well as other people who study gratitude in this kind of interpersonal domain, we're really starting to find that gratitude seems to be the glue for our social lives and most of our social connections.
And this, of course, broadens into the community. Dr. Tucker Keltner, let me ask you, you refer in your article in the Wall Street Journal to an experiment done by someone else. I mean, you mentioned the philosopher Adam Smith and his argument, the theory of moral sentiments, that gratitude is the glue that holds communities together, as Sarah Alger was just saying, but that there was also this experiment done by some other people who you experimented with doing something for someone and then what they turned and did around for someone else. Could you talk about this experiment a little bit?
Yeah, well, you know, this is, and you alluded to this early, Jackie, which is that, you know, not only does gratitude benefit you personally, right? It calms you down, it brings you delight and the like. But there are also a lot of new studies showing that when I express gratitude, as Sarah is saying, to my romantic partner, to a friend, to a stranger on the street, which people are doing all the time, that expression of gratitude stays with the recipient and then triggers kind pro-social behavior in that recipient in subsequent interactions. So there are studies that show, for example, that if I'm express gratitude or generosity to somebody, to a stranger, that stranger in a next set of interactions will be 10 to 15% more generous and kind. And so that kind of ripple effect of gratitude is why people like Adam Smith, the great economist, said that this, as Sarah said, gratitude is this social glue. It is, in some sense, a very important fabric of really strong communities and reason to cultivate it.
Okay. Let's take calls here. We're getting a lot. Bill is calling from New Haven, Connecticut. Welcome to On Point, Bill.
Hi, Jackie. Happy holidays. And I'm grateful that you're having the show today. I'm a yoga practitioner, and you're touching on all the points that we bring about in our practice. We wake up in the morning with a sense of gratitude. We start with a realistic intention. And we could take that into a 40-day practice where we're mindful and grateful for everything that comes our way, very open to it, and then being objective into what we could change realistically. And I just want to thank you folks for bringing this point up.
Well, thank you, Bill, and I really mean it. Thanks for calling. Let's take another call here. Anne is calling from Boston, Massachusetts. Welcome to On Point, Anne.
Thank you. Hi, Jackie. I was calling because hearing this is very interesting and gratifying. I suffer from a chronic illness, and I think that one of the feelings that comes about a lot from feeling physically and kind of mentally unwell more often than not is that you often feel like you don't have anything to offer other people. And gratitude, I often go back to, is this last thing I can offer to the people who help me, who listen to me, who put up with my day-to-day nonsense, who treat my illness. And it does become this currency. And I think that when you express regret about something, the people that you're expressing it to are almost like, oh, someone feels badly. Like, you in turn feel some sort of negativity. And when people express gratitude, even if you've emptied yourself for them, they're giving you a positive, they're giving you something positive in currency. And so this is great to hear, and it makes me feel like there's something to keeping up with it to keep myself healthy and up and remembering that things get better.
Thank you, Anne. Sarah Aljo, Dr. Keltner, what do you think about this? Anne is talking about something she can give to others. That's just what we were saying a few minutes ago in the relationship study, wasn't it, Sarah?
Yeah, and some of my research really suggests this, and as Decker was saying, the other research from other people's labs as well, is that there really is something to the expression of gratitude, that just acknowledging the goodness of other people or the kindness or the thoughtfulness of other people's actions seems to really have an impact. So in one of my other studies, we actually showed, again, using we enrolled couples in romantic relationships, and we found that we had couples come in, and we told them we wanted to have them do this kind of everyday conversation. And in this particular one, we were interested in knowing more about how they say thanks to one another. And so they just they picked something that they felt grateful to their partner for, and they took up to 5 minutes to just say thanks to the partner right there in that lab session. But immediately after that conversation, we asked the partner to tell us how that felt. How much did they feel like the person who was expressing gratitude understood them and validated them and got them? And what we found was that the feeling, how much they felt like their partner got them, actually forecasted their feelings of relationship satisfaction 6 months later. So these expressions of gratitude can really have an impact immediately, making us feel valued, and that impact may carry forward to our future feelings and quality of our relationship with those people.
Let's take another call here. Augusto is calling from Worcester, Massachusetts. Welcome to On Point, Augusto.
Thank you for having me.
Thanks for being here. Let's have your comment.
Well, as I was just listening to this and being 23 years old and in this generation and with all these commercial items and just especially during the holidays, it's tough because a lot of people don't appreciate what they have. It doesn't matter what age they are, but especially my generation. For example, there were these Jordans that came out last week.
Air Jordans, uh-huh.
Yeah, Air Jordans, yes. And you're waiting in line, you're not going to work, you're lucky that you're on school break, but you're spending these $200 on a pair of sneakers that, like you said, you know, you're going to wear them once, you're going to put them in a box, and you're not going to really appreciate them. But instead of taking those $200 to buy those sneakers, give them to a family member. Buy a gift, donate it. You know, it just like when we do when you guys do the NPR, the donations, put it towards NPR. It's tough because not a lot of kids my age, you know, they don't appreciate what they have. And, you know, growing up, you know, in a religious family, I think that really helped me. And just, I've been with my girlfriend for 6 years. So it's like, being 23, you grow that wisdom and, you know, you appreciate things. So I feel like, especially in this generation, you have to appreciate what you have, because then realistically it's going to be gone when you turn around.
Well, thank you so much for sharing that, Augusto. And I think thanks to the NPR contributions. But thank you. It's a really valuable lesson and thought. Dr. Keltner, could you react to that? Because
sure.
I think, is Augusto beating himself up a little bit when it comes to his generation?
Well, he is. But I think that his comment reflects a very interesting change that is happening with the millennials, which is that, you know, we know from broad sociological data, survey data from the past 25 years that, regrettably, my generation, which is the generation that precedes Augusto's, was one of the more materialistic, greedy generations in the past 100 years. But things are changing. And the fact that Augusto is raising the question and the idea of, instead of spending money on another pair of shoes, maybe you should give it away, that's starting to be a defining value of the millennials, the 20-year-olds who are a little bit more interested in giving things away to charity, a little bit more interested in people truly in need and lifting up their welfare. So I think Augustus Compton is a sign of the times of things that are changing.
You also did a study, I believe, out there in Berkeley about touch and gratitude. I found this fascinating. Explain what that was, please.
Sure. So, and I think this really relates to Anne's comment about gratitude being this immeasurably important currency in our social relationships, no matter where you are in life. So I was interested in our lab in the physical expression of gratitude. We know from studies of non-human primates that they groom each other a lot as a way to express affection and perhaps gratitude for food that's been shared or for kind acts that have been generated. And so in our study in Berkeley, and you might only be able to do this in Berkeley, what we did is we brought people to the lab. One person sat on one side of a big barrier in the lab and stuck their arm through a hole in this barrier. Another person came into the lab, was given a list of emotions, and all they could do is reach out and touch that person's forearm to try to express emotions like anger or love or compassion or gratitude. And what we found, which was really remarkable, is with a little half-second touch to a stranger's forearm, you can communicate with remarkable accuracy gratitude, right, and compassion. If you cast that within what we know about touch, touch actually calms people down. It activates reward circuits in the brain. Touch is a very powerful way in which we express gratitude.
That's fascinating. I would not really have expected that. Let's see if we can sneak in one more call before the break. Josh is calling from Montague, Massachusetts. Welcome to On Point, Josh.
I just wanted to say that I think it's very important for parents to begin to cultivate the sense of gratitude in children when they're very young, partly by modeling gratitude and also by not overdoing the gift-giving aspect, especially at Christmas, so that your child's room isn't filled with so many toys that there isn't an appreciation for one special toy, or they get tired of toys so quickly. And sometimes parents now are buying very expensive electronic gadgets for very young children. And I think there's actually a website that has to do with this whole idea, which is called Simplicity Parenting, just keeping it simple, and it helps to cultivate gratitude in children.
And I just want to say we're going to be talking about that more in the next part of this show, Josh, sort of focusing specifically on cultivating that attitude in children. So thanks so much for that point. Sarah Aljo, could you also just respond to the touch study a little bit before we close out here?
Oh, yeah. Well, I think that's one of the most fascinating features of one of the, you know, most fascinating findings on gratitude out there, that it's such a, you know, human social life is human connection is so essential to social life. And this is like a really nice physical demonstration that of the role of gratitude in close connections. And so I think one of the things that kind of interested me about gratitude in the first place is that I really think that it has been overlooked as this really essential glue that helps bring people together.
This is On Point. I'm Jackie Leiden, in for Tom Ashbrook. We're pausing to contemplate gratitude, what it does to the body and mind, what it does to our society, and why, scientifically, it's good for us. You can join the conversation. We say that we live in a more materialistic, rushed, and competitive world, and really that we're less grateful for all that we have. Is that true? Is gratitude hard or easy once you get the hang of it? My guests are Dr. Dacher Keltner, co-director of the Greater Good Science Center in the Department of Psychology at UC Berkeley, Dr. Sarah Aljo, professor and researcher at the Department of Psychology at the University of North Carolina, Chapel Hill, and joining us now is Cindy Botticello, a school teacher at McGee Middle School in Berlin, Connecticut. Welcome to On Point, Cindy.
Hi, Jackie.
So as a, you teach primary school, right?
I teach sixth graders.
Sixth graders. And you're the mother of young children. And I'd like to, we just were talking with someone who talked about how important it is. It is a fine calibration. How do you not overwhelm your children this time of year? Teach them gratitude. And this is something you've actually been trying in a systematic way to inculcate in your sixth graders, right?
Yes, actually, I think it's been more of a whole school project that we've been working on.
All right.
I'm very fortunate to work in a district that supports many character building programs, and we've had a number of them come over the years, including, I don't know if you're familiar with Ann Kibitsky's Look for the Good Project, which we had a couple of years ago come through our school, and it's really, it started as a grassroots community art project that taught kids about what it means to be grateful and what is gratitude, and it kind of opened their eyes to just being grateful for things around them instead of those material things that are given to them,
so,
and to notice things.
Okay, so do they keep journals? Do they speak out loud? Do they do practice exercises with others in the school? What does it involve?
Well, they do all kinds of things from day to day. It could be that they're journaling about maybe today what they're grateful about, what do they notice, the people in their lives, who are they grateful for. They also notice things around the school, just having things that other schools don't have. And, you know, we've been fortunate that our kids have kind of run with it. You know, I think it's hard because we're in a day and an age where kids are given a lot of things and they keep wanting more. And it's something that kind of motivates them, is to always get something. And it's nice to see that we are teaching our kids that they don't always need to get something in return, that it's better to kind of give and be grateful for what you have. And that's kind of the lesson that we're trying to teach them.
Interesting. Let's take another call here. Susan is calling from Sharon, Massachusetts. Welcome to On Point, Susan.
Thank you. I'm delighted to be with you. This topic could not be more pertinent and relevant to a situation with my best friend's son. He was diagnosed with a mild form of autism and did not speak until he was 5 years old. This child has made such unbelievable gains. He applied to, I know I can't mention the name of the school, he applied to a school that's on par with an Ivy League school here in Massachusetts. It was his dream to go there. He'd done several programs, several extracurricular programs there, and he really put all his stock into attending the school. Well, he got flatly rejected from the school a week ago Monday, and rather than mope and rather than swear and rather than go to his bedroom and rather than be angry, this child on his own without any prodding went upstairs to his bedroom and wrote the most magnificent letter of gratitude to the college, thanking them for considering his applicancy, thanking the college for the opportunities that he was given on an extracurricular basis and how they enriched him and how much he wished them luck with the candidates that they had chosen, and clearly they had chosen people that were a better fit.
Yeah.
And he just wanted to say thank you.
Well, thank you, now, Susan, for that story. That really is, that is an...
It doesn't end there. I'm sorry to interrupt. The coolest thing of all was that on the first night of Hanukkah, clearly we're Jewish folks and a lot of Jewish folks in the town of Sharon, and on the first night of Hanukkah, my best friend and her family were lighting their candles for the first night. The holiday is all about the miracle of light. And he received an email from an even more appropriate college, also very, very prestigious in the state of Massachusetts, accepting him to this college. And so the message here is that how do you turn such immense disappointment into a moment of gratitude? We can all find those immense moments of disappointment and rejection. But it's how do we turn that into a moment of gratitude?
Okay, thank you. Thank you so much, Susan. Let's turn that over to you, Cindy, because here you have, again, a young person. This is a wonderful story. Thank you for it, Susan. How does Susan's experience with this young man who did this, how does that fit with your rather younger students who you're trying to teach the same, I would imagine. I don't know if you're telling them take a negative experience and turn it into a positive.
I want to say what an incredible young man to have that mindset and to be able to react the way that he did is just simply amazing. Yes, that is our goal. I'm very fortunate. I work with a woman named Linda Garrity who teaches the reading and the writing portion. I teach the math in sixth grade. And, you know, one of the things that she always says is you need to learn to flip it. We need to flip it in our mind. We need to be able to change whatever our current perspective is, and especially if it's negative, into something positive. And what are we going to do with that? And how can we be grateful for this experience? Because there's always something to learn from it. And, you know, just starting with young children and teaching them that things don't always work out the way that you expect them to or you hope to. And it's really more about what are you going to do after something doesn't work as well as you had hoped? How are you going to grow from it? What are you going to take away from that experience? And you know, maybe not initially, but eventually be grateful for the opportunity and, you know, the point or the chance to learn from it.
Well, the fact that it can be taught, actually, I think is something interesting. I mean, we teach a lot of lessons in school, and the gratitude lesson is obviously one that you're experimenting with and having good results with. Let's go to another call here. Christopher is calling from Atlanta, Georgia. Atlanta Web Representative today. Welcome, Christopher.
Hi, Jackie. I have a question. What happens when there's social hardships going on? To what degree do people start having trouble giving gratitude? Because I remember when there was a lot of hard times going on, like in 08. My mother was grateful for things, but it was a bit more depressing. So to what degree do people start having trouble giving gratitude in these times like that?
I think that's a great question, Christopher, and let's put it to Dacher. I just sort of scouting around my own circle of friends, I know that some people are struggling with really serious health issues with their parents right here at the holidays. Can we feel grateful, and do you recommend trying to find that at a time when things are in not just, you know, workaday, but crisis?
Well, I think that you know, we've done a little bit of work on that, and I think Anne's comment earlier dealing with chronic illness speaks to this, which is that, you know, people, because gratitude is so essential and so deep in our evolution and about expressing what you're thankful for to others, it really arises even often most poignantly in crisis. So, you know, our work has shown, for example, that people who are really affected by the economic downturn, who really suffered economically, were actually often demonstrating more kindness and more sharing and more generosity and felt more gratitude. So we do have this incredible capacity when facing hardship to express our gratitude, because in some sense, hardship brings into focus what's most essential. You know, if I can just tell you a quick story, I teach out at San Quentin Prison to guys that are part of a restorative justice program who are in there for life. And I had naively thought they had nothing to be grateful for. And when I asked them, I said, you know, there's 150 guys I was talking to, you know, all right, well, tell me what you're grateful for. I had never heard more powerful answers of grateful to have friends and family still with them and to have the air to breathe and food to, although it's not that great, to eat. You know, so it is this universal capacity, often most poignant in times of hardship.
We'll take another call here. David is calling from Hartford, Connecticut. Welcome to On Point, David.
Hi, Jackie. This is a great show, and I just wanted to comment. I think a corollary to gratitude is contentment, that feeling that what you have is enough. And my example is, for my son just turned 20. For the last 2 years, for Christmas and his birthday as well, when we asked him what he would like, his answer was, nothing really. I have everything I need, which just totally blew us away. And we've really raised him with an idea or rather stressing the difference between need and want. And we were just so pleased that he has a feeling that he's content with his life the way it is.
Well, thank you for that comment, David. Before I go back to our panel, I would like to get a couple more calls in here, which that call was about contentment as a corollary to gratitude. Matt is calling from West Roxbury, Massachusetts. Welcome to On Point, Matt.
Hi, Jackie. So as a member of Alcoholics Anonymous, one of the, you know, basic tenets of the program is gratitude. And, you know, following the previous thread about, you know, the gentleman who worked with prisons and prisoners in California, you know, you never see more gratitude than you do in the rooms of Alcoholics Anonymous. And here's a disease that's been recognized by the American Medical Association as, you know, incurable by any synthetic methods. What it really comes down to is, you know, support through other people, goodwill, and gratitude. And, you know, in treatment programs, gratitude lists are essential. And it's funny because amongst a group of people who you'd think, you know, are hopeless and don't necessarily have any material reason to, you know, be happy even, you see more gratitude and, you know, more hope for the future when surrounded by other people. So there's this wonderful group dynamic that's really reinforced. And I think that that's one of the basic things, one of the most important things when it comes to establishing gratitude.
And recovery, I think, is what our psychologists have been talking about, that it is a normative feeling. It's an emotion, Docker, but also it has actual health benefits and restorative benefits.
It does, and I love David's reference to contentment because I think, you know, as you practice gratitude through writing exercises, diary exercises that Cindy alluded to, noticing things, you get this sense that, you know, you everything that you need is right in front of you, and it typically involves the people that are important to you.
Let's get one or two more calls in here. Haskell is calling from Lexington, Kentucky. Welcome to On Point, Haskell.
Yes. Yes, it's a great program. I'm a visually handicapped. My VA diagnosis is catastrophically disabled. They're treating me for 9 conditions. I'm legally blind. I got trained by the VA, Hines VA in Chicago, to do help with computer help. And I set out to show other veterans that despite your handicap, despite whatever happens, you can have resilience. So a year ago, I set out to write my memoir on resilience, published now, and I kept on writing. I now have 11 books on Kindle and 7 on Amazon.
Wow.
To show handicapped veterans that no matter what happens, you can live with joy and gratitude. It's been a fantastic journey. I'm 85, and I live with joy and gratitude. And I have 2 children, grandchildren today, celebrating survival for bone marrow transplant. So we have just so much to be grateful for. This is a great program.
Well,
thank you very much.
Thank you, Haskell. And just very quickly, I'm going to go to Dominique in Cambridge, Massachusetts. Welcome to On Point, Dominique, but please keep it short.
Yeah, hi. I just wanted to make a point about gratitude in the workplace. I'm the owner of a company based out of Cambridge, and I really run my company based on frequent expressions of appreciation for my team members, and they do the same with each other. And it's very different from how I saw my father run his much bigger company, which kind of was more of a fear-based model with all of his employees quaking in their boots their entire lives. So I just wanted to emphasize the importance of appreciation and gratitude in the workplace.
Thank you for that, Dominique. So, Sarah Aljo, Dr. Kuttner, what can we say this translates to at this season? I mean, how do we practice this tomorrow, Dr. Keltner?
I think, you know, we've kind of gleaned some wisdom here, which is, you know, take a minute each day or even every once a week, you know, and just sort of think about the things that have been given to you. Sarah's research, I don't want to speak for her, but we've done similar work. Make sure that you express it physically. You know, make sure that you look at somebody in the eye with the right intention, give them a hug or pat on the back and say thanks. So there are a lot of very everyday acts of gratitude that make a massive difference.
Cindy, I just have to ask you, did you have the kids write cards to people this year?
I'm sorry, can you repeat that again?
Well, we only have a moment. Did you have your students write thank you cards?
Oh, yes, they've written many thank you cards. We actually did a huge Veterans Day assembly and special thank you day to the local veterans. And, you know, it was just another touching day for us where kids just recognized people within the community and outside of our community, abroad.
Well, I want to thank all of you for being with us today. Cindy Botticello teaches math at McGee Middle School in Berlin, Connecticut. Sarah Aljo is a professor and researcher at the Department of Psychology at the University of North Carolina, Chapel Hill. Dacher Keltner is co-director of the Greater Good Science Center in the Department of Psychology at UC Berkeley. Thank you for your article. Thank you all for being here, and have a very, very happy holiday. You can continue the conversation and get the On Point podcast at our website at onpointradio.org and follow us on Twitter and Facebook. I'm Jackie Leiden in for Tom Ashbrook. Thanks for having me here. Thank you.